kind of a disorganized talk I'm going to give. So, but I heard during the other talks we heard this morning that people are mentioning systemic risk. So maybe that's what I should try to talk about, especially now in the present context where we all know these tragic events, where we have this causal sequence of events. We had first the earthquake triggering the tsunami. The tsunami then triggered this catastrophe at the nuclear power plant. And now I'm claiming that this catastrophe at the nuclear power plant actually is triggering another thing, namely price quakes in the financial markets worldwide. So so basically that's the short outline here. So, but let me try to maybe start out differently, namely because this is kind of systemic view of trying to look at financial markets as from a systemic point of view. But usually people try out at the individual level. We have, fortunately, they had a new domain called behavioral finance entering, becoming more and more a la mode, if you can say. It becomes more and more relevant, obviously. And it's very good because they actually, as we just heard in the talks of John, it highlights some of the real dangers and what's going on in real financial markets. So you have different beliefs, and maybe if you one should really try to put out what is the status of the field so far. It resulted in a Nobel Prize in 2002 to Kahneman. Tversky died, but from the prospect theory. Prospect theory is actually very simple to understand. It's very nice. It's very nice because it gives you a theory which you can go out, you can make experiments, and you can actually check it. So it sounds like a scientific way of doing things. So prospect theory, let me just tell it to you very quickly. Well, it's very simple. Actually, it's just three different things. Prospect theory tells you that, if Bill Gates invest $1 million, or if I invested $1 million in the stock market, we would have different utility function, or you would feel differently about it. So it's important the relative wealth that people have in the sentiment of the market. That's one thing. So the relative wealth matters. That's one of the things from prospect theory. Another thing is, and you can go out and check this. You can make experiments. You can check it. And it turns out it's true. Another thing is that you have a risk aversion. So people feel very differently compared to when they win. Even the smallest loss is felt like a kind of a tragedy. So you have a kink here in terms of if you look at the value. When you gain, you feel all right. But if you lose just a small amount of money, people don't like that. And after, for some time, well, they don't care any longer. So you have this... you have risk aversion. Very nice work again. You have a theory, you go out and you can take it. So that was the second thing in prospect theory. Last thing in prospect theory is that people are very bad at estimating probabilities. People have the tendency for something which is completely unlikely to happen to put too much weight on it. People keep on buying lottery tickets, even though they have no chance of gaining, of course. So, again, that's also something you can go out, make experiments, and check it. So, to me, it's really, really big step forward. I was kind of surprised that it got a Nobel Prize because we have this. It's very much dominated by this orthodox view, but it's definitely one big step forward, I think. Now, what we need to do, I think, is to try to take it further steps forward. I don't know exactly how to do it, but I think when it comes to systemic risk, we need to try to get a better understanding of risks at the systemic level. Let me give you one example here. So, and to me, it's a question I'm trying to look at when it comes to finance. I don't know exactly how you're doing in food industry, but when it comes to finance, it's a question of looking at data. It's really, again, we come back to it, it's a question of looking at data, and I got a good hold of it. So what I showed you here is you can I called it well, the psychology they called it chains blindness. So you have chains blindness. People, humans have the tendency not to remark small changes, but when there's something big happening, they jump in. And you can see that now in financial markets. So you can see this here from these are empirical data. What I showed you here is the probability. If you now imagine that you have many stock indices worldwide, what is the probability if you made an index out of all the different countries in the world, what is the probability that one country is going to follow? And it turns out, here it's the market return. So you can think of the global markets, if they moved with a small amount, say 1%, 0.5% here, what is the probability that a given country is going to follow that movement? So what is important to see here in the data is that whenever you have big swings on the markets worldwide, the probability that a given country is going to follow that movement is very big. Now, the U.S. markets, of course, in terms of the capitalization, is dominant market. So that gives a particularly good way of looking at the influence, if you want, on different markets. So if you look at the U.S. market open-close, that means how the stock market performed at a given day over here in North America, then you could look at the following day at the opening how the different markets follow worldwide. And you see the same thing here again, that if you had a huge either positive or negative movement, you have this tendency that everybody's going to follow, like we saw in Japan now. So to me, the striking thing is, that's the reason I call this change blindness, is that if you have a small movement, the probability that a given market is going to follow the U.S. markets is 0.5, so it's completely random. But whenever you have a big move, you can be sure, almost 100% sure, that not one, these are all different countries in the world, they're going to follow it. So you have this tendency, which maybe does not sound too surprising to you, I don't know. But it has impacts. And if I want to give you just one key thing of what I'm talking about now, this is it. Because to me, this means that and I'm not going to have time to explain in detail why this is it, but it means that it means first that during crisis, markets are more correlated. But it also means, and that's more important to me, that the markets have memory. Now, if the markets have memory, we are really in big problems in terms of systemic risk. Let me try to illustrate this by just giving you one. Illustrate this by one example. The Sandpile model. So to understand systemic risk in the sandpile model, you imagine yourself it's a hot summer day, you are on the beach, and you start making a sandpile. So so you drop some grain of sands here, and what you'll see is, of course, a slope. You'll see a sandpile growing until a certain slope, which is critical. When it has this critical slope, it stays there, it just goes bigger, but the slope stays more or less constant. Now, what is interesting here is that the sandpile has a memory. It has a memory because somehow the way sands are dropped organizes this whole system into responding. It's called critical angle response. And the sandpile responds to the perturbations you have on it. Same thing if you think of in terms of financial markets. You had the tsunami, given the earthquakes, given the reactor incident, and then you have markets going to respond to it. So when the funny thing is, if you look at now, before you enter this critical state, if you look at probability, just dropping one grain of sand, that you have a propagation which has catastrophic events, size of other grains of sand tumbling further down, when you're exactly in this case here, when you have this critical slope, when the system have somehow magically turned itself into this critical system, you have, well, in physics you call it long-range correlation, but you have the probability to have events which have fat tails or catastrophic events. Actually, it turns out that you see the same thing in terms of, we all hear about the Gutenberg-Richter law. That's for earthquakes. For earthquakes, it's exactly the same thing. You have, most of the time, we don't even feel it here. We have lots of earthquakes we don't feel. So you have lots of small earthquakes, but all of a sudden you get a big one. And so you get this very nice Gutenberg-Richter law for earthquakes, which is really one of the best laws in physics, because you have over, I think, 18 decades of data, which is huge, really. One of the best verified laws. Meaning that most of the time, you have stresses build up, nothing happens, but all of a sudden, you have a certain probability you get into a critical state. So it's quite interesting from a point of view that when people first introduced this idea of the sand path, that exactly in this state where it's critical, everything becomes very, very hard to predict, but becomes also very catastrophic in the sense that most of the time nothing happens, but a small thing can trigger a devastating effect. So the funny thing is, actually, looking at this data, that's funny. Here, looking at this data, which is, you have a kind of step function here, if you want, you have some abrupt thing, you can actually, the funny thing is that you can, I'll not go into detail with it here, but you can map this onto a model for earthquakes, actually. So now you can define price quakes, as I said, and let me just show you one example here, where you get quakes here in terms of building up a stress. The build of stress happens because you can either have gradual movements that the U.S. markets move over several days, and when they have moved enough, the other markets are going to follow. That's one way of creating memory or critical events. And then you can see, defining this earthquake model here, you can see the quakes here actually happening. And the interesting thing, of course, is that the quakes seems to be bigger in bear markets. When you have bull markets, somehow people stay more calm, and then you have these huge quakes again entering at the top of the market here. So, again, I don't know how much this has to do with food. But if my main point is really that there are things which are not completely obvious a priori to understand in terms of systemic risk, in terms of financial markets. I think there are a lot of things which would be interesting. I would like to stress again that the idea to go back into the laboratory, try to do experiments, and then see what's going on. And I think that's really, really the way forward. So thank you. Thank you.